Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. Kinda. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we'll be doing that more regularly as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on March 30th, 2020. Just so you know, some of this information may have changed by the time you've heard it. Wow, March is almost over, huh? I don't know what day it is, or where I am, or what time it is. It's a flat surface, right? This podcast is filled with South Carolina COVID-19 news and stories that matter to you, your family, and your fellow South Carolinians during this uncertain time. One thing you can be certain of is that each episode is structured to give you the latest news up front, followed by additional context, on-the-ground reporting from myself and South Carolina Public Radio reporters, and also your voices. Yes, we want to hear from you, so send us voice messages. We also have resources and tips, and we end the podcast with a nice little wind down at the end. And like I mentioned, we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life, what you're doing to get by. Maybe if you're still commuting to work, tell us what's going on. We want to hear from you. Let us know how life has changed for you in these past few weeks we've been experiencing this. Leave us a message at 803-563-7169. Again, leave us your name, message, where you're calling from, what's going on with you at 803-563-7169. Now here's a look at the most recent activity in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 has entered the acceleration phase, according to the Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 18 deaths, and currently there are 925 cases being reported in 41 counties as of March 30th at 4 p.m. President Donald Trump on Friday issued a federal disaster declaration for the state, which provides federal funding assistance for emergency protective measures and recovery efforts. Trump announced on Sunday that social distancing guidelines will stay in place for 30 more days. This as scientists warn the virus continues to spread across the country and in South Carolina. The announcement comes as his top health officials say deaths in the country could reach 100 to 200,000. DHEC has dispatched 600 staff to deal with the virus and has finished working through a backlog of 1,800 cases, a backlog due to short supply of material to run the tests. Now, that backlog has led to some big jumps, which can be somewhat misleading for modeling, according to state epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell, who broke it down on Friday and said it's hard to pinpoint when a peak may occur.
Some of these projections seem unlikely, and they're based on comparisons to other populations that might not be valid. If we look at something like a New York City population that might have over 100 people per square mile versus in South Carolina, where we generally have fewer than 20 people per square mile. So our living conditions and other factors, when we monitor disease reports to make speculations about the shape of the curve, as I've mentioned, that there can be delays in reporting and there can be a large jump in reports on a single day. That can frame the shape of that curve, but that is a factitious elevation in a curve just because samples are held. So some of this modeling is based on simply delays in reporting or delays in turning out test results. And what we believe is our more accurate representations is that we're unlikely to see an exponential rise in cases in South Carolina. We recognize that cases are going to continue to increase. How steeply that increase continues depends on the effectiveness of the social distancing measures, and we can flatten that curve if people strictly observe the social distancing, stay home when you're sick, and that can change the shape of the curve. So there's a lot of speculation about that.
And again, DHEC's modeling is showing that they expect over 2,000 cases by April 2nd, which is Thursday, just so you have some idea about where the days are again. And we expect to see about 8,000 cases by early May. Let's jump back into the politics again about what we're looking at here with COVID-19 and the state. Like I said in our last episode, the state attorney general's office issued a non-binding legal opinion that said local governments cannot exercise the emergency powers delegated to the governor by the General Assembly. This prompted some places like Folly Beach and Edisto Beach to rescind their previous orders since someone could sue the city citing that opinion. And then Folly and Edisto reinstated their orders after the beaches got crowded. Other municipalities have held off by issuing any orders because of a fear of being sued. While the Attorney General's office has issued the opinion, but is not pushing for an injunction in any of these situations. But here's the rub. The AG opinion only addresses the state code dealing with the governor's powers. There's an entire other section that grants town councils broad emergency powers. And if that sounds confusing and conflicting, well, it is. That's why I spoke to someone who does this for a living and is a municipal lawyer. And also state representative. That's Mandy Powers Norrell, a Democrat from Lancaster. And she broke down the situation and gave her viewpoint on what needs to be done.
So there are a lot of unanswered questions now because there are municipalities that are going to be reluctant to do what they would otherwise do as far as stay-at-home orders because they are afraid of being sued after the opinions that the Attorney General has brought down. And I talked to him about it yesterday. I think that municipalities have very specifically delegated powers in the in statute that allow them to protect life and health in the event of an emergency.
And what's the counter argument? Because when we look at these opinions, you know, we're talking about almost two different parts of the code. You know, he's quoting one
right.
section, which is specifically to the governor and these
right.
Emergency powers. And then you've quoted another section, which deals with municipalities, which seems pretty mm-hmm. broad when you look at that code section. So what's the difference here?
So his argument is, at least as he argued it to me, he says that, you know, that the governor's ruling or his executive order preempts anything the governor does in an emergency will preempt what the powers delegated to the municipalities. However, that's only if they are inconsistent with each other. So they have to be inconsistent for his argument to prevail. And they are not, in this case, inconsistent. The governor, having declined to issue a stay-at-home order, does not mean that municipalities cannot on their own issue stay-at-home orders. And I've listened to, you know, the governor's press conferences, and he himself has said that different regions of the state need different things. And what's right for Charleston may not be right for, say, Marlboro County, where there's less density and people are able to have more space when they go places. So I think the governor recognizes that. And so just based on his own statements, clearly, his order is not inconsistent and would therefore not preempt the use of emergency powers by municipalities. And those emergency powers are specifically designated in state statute and given to municipalities.
In your opinion, I mean, would you prefer to see the governor take a statewide approach, or do you think that this should be left up to the munis, especially these higher density areas?
There are two things the governor could do. Now, I would love to see the governor take a statewide approach and tell us all to stay at home, because even in my area, there are people, there are places that attract dense crowds. And so, you know, and we don't have, you know, a whole lot of density otherwise, but there are also employers who say, I will only close down and let my employees go home or work from home if the governor tells me I have to. And I'm hearing from a lot of employees who are worried for themselves and their families, and they don't want to be in an area where they're going to be encountering people. So they're asking for the governor to do that statewide. I would love to see him do it, but I don't think he has to do it in order to give municipalities that want to do it a greater sense of comfort in their ordinances. The governor could just issue an executive order that reemphasizes that municipalities have the right to order, you know, stay at home if they choose to in their own emergency ordinances.
But what would you be advising a, you know, municipality in this situation in terms of if you think you could fight and win in court at this point, knowing what you know?
At this point, if I were to represent a municipality that wanted to do this and were nervous about it, I mean, we saw Folly Beach and Edisto, they closed the beaches and then the first opinion comes out and they open the beaches and then they close the beaches again because they're nervous about this opening them up to greater liability where people sue and say, well, you should have known because the Attorney General said that you should have known, you know, you could be sued. I mean, clearly they could have been sued anyway. But I think that if I were representing a municipality, I would be wanting to have a certainty about this. And I might even file for a declaratory action from the Supreme Court. so that I could know once and for all if that statute gives me the power to enact emergency ordinances. And I think it does. And I think that a Supreme Court order would give them that that level of assurance that I think some of them are probably going to need before they're willing to take that action.
McMaster has repeatedly said that he does not want to issue an order and says South Carolinians are already taking the steps necessary to limit the spread. It's also worth noting that these stay-at-home orders make some big exceptions for businesses deemed essential. Over on the Grand Strand, starting last Friday, Myrtle Beach and Horry County shut down hotels, short-term rentals, amusement parks, mini-golf, and basically everything that makes the place fun through April 30th. The city of Myrtle Beach did make an exception for golf courses, though. The big kid golf courses, though, not the little mini-golf. The Sun News pointed out that the Horry County Council made their decision in an unannounced meeting, which they say they can do due to the emergency situation. So Friday was big for a lot of these decisions, including the governor's announcement of a mandatory two-week quarantine for folks arriving from hotspots such as Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and the city of New Orleans. Like we said, talking about Myrtle Beach, since then the airport in Myrtle Beach has been posting passenger arrivals from New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Charlotte, and Atlanta on its Facebook page. And I know that's kind of wonky, but I think one of the most interesting data points that I saw from all this was from Thursday through Saturday, when only 68 passengers arrived from Charlotte Douglas International Airport. So 68 compared to the 1,500 for the same time period last year. Just goes to show really the impact of the situation here. And filing in South Carolina has closed Monday at noon for November elections. As of now, the primaries are still scheduled for June 9th. Now we have some statewide news here in our business section, but I want to start off with a bit of a global perspective. The head of the International Monetary Fund said Friday that the global economy has clearly entered a recession that could be as bad or worse as 2009. Here's IMF head Kristalina Georgieva.
We have reassessed the prospects for growth for 2020 and 2021. It is now clear that we have entered a recession as bad or worse than in 2009. We do project recovery in 2021. In fact, there may be a sizable rebound, but only if we succeed with containing the virus everywhere and prevent liquidity problems from becoming a solvency issue. A key concern about a long-lasting impact of the sudden stop of the world economy is the risk of a wave of bankruptcies and layoffs that not only can undermine the recovery, but can erode the fabric of our societies. To avoid this happening, many countries have taken far-reaching measures to address the health crisis and to cushion its impact on the economy, both on the monetary and on the fiscal side. The G20 yesterday reported fiscal measures totaling some $5 trillion, or over 6% of global GDP.
Again, that was Kristalina Georgieva with the IMF. Now for a more local look at the economy, Mary Eldridge has been a frequent diner at Cafe Strudel, a West Columbia staple since 1997. But last Sunday, she wasn't waiting in the restaurant's eclectic confines for a table. Rather, she was picking up some brunch essentials, including fresh squeezed orange juice for...
Yes, mimosas, absolutely. So if there was ever a Sunday to have one, I think this is one. We have some cinnamon pancakes in there. I think some normal breakfast sides, bacon biscuits, things like that. But other than that, try to get in a nice afternoon walk before the rain comes and then go back to my apartment. So continue to try to social distance.
Co-owner Walter Turbefill described the scene for us.
What time is it now?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. So you have never seen a Sunday in recent memory that it looks like this at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning. We're extremely, extremely busy. And so blessed and with such a loyal, faithful clientele that, you know, normally when we open the doors on Sunday morning, there's 50 to 75 people waiting in line. So we're always amazed and humbled and appreciative. And you know, like I say, you had seen this in a in a recent memory on a Sunday morning.
Instead, it was a trickle of telephone calls and takeout orders.
Okay, should really only be about 10 minutes. Thank you so much.
That is Casey Marie, one of the few employees still on staff.
What are people ordering?
Breakfast, French toast, pancakes, our hangover hash browns, our most famous thing.
What's the hangover hash browns?
It's our hash browns with banana peppers, eggs, tomatoes, meat.
All said, in the first hour, they took about a dozen orders. And sometimes Casey would run out to the vehicles to deliver the food.
I got food!
Bless you!
God.
Speaking of food and vehicles, Cafe Strudel just rolled out its new food truck that it's operating in partnership with a local chef who already had the truck. Turby Phil says the timing was happenstance and will help give some competitive edge to the restaurant. Despite the uncertainty, Turbyville remains optimistic going forward.
You know, it's like I said, it's unprecedented, and I think, you know, and there's going to be people, hindsight's always 2020. We should have done this, we should have done that, you could have done that, you know, you always got that, you know. So there's always things you can do different. You know, it's just like raising kids. You do the best you can at the time. Do you do a perfect job? No. But you do the best that you know how to do at the time, and I think that's what we're doing. And but what keeps going through my mind is, you know, the Bible says, Lord, we'll not give you more than you can handle. So bring it on. If the Lord lets it happen, we can handle it.
Cafe Strudel is one of nearly 10,000 bars and restaurants in South Carolina, and is part of the roughly 30% of the state's economy that is undergoing major disruption due to COVID-19. Mike Switzer with the South Carolina Business Review recently spoke with Dr. Joey Von Nessen, who is a research economist at the Darla Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. Von Nessen gives us insight on the state's near-record unemployment claims and says, again, that up to 30% of the state's economy is experiencing a major disruption due to the need for social distancing.
I think a good way to think about what's going on is to consider it almost more as a natural disaster than as a normal recession. Because normally when you see an economic contraction or an economic recession, what we've seen historically is where economic activity typically scales back over a period of months. And in this case, that's not happening. We're seeing broad swaths of the American economy essentially being placed on hold. And I would liken it more to a large snowstorm or perhaps a hurricane here in South Carolina, where people are basically stranded in place and it makes it very difficult for economic activity to occur. So as a result, we're seeing a much larger disruption over a very short period of time. And that's why we're seeing some of these numbers all over the board and some pretty dramatic negative forecasts.
And the unemployment applications have just been announced, 3 million people, swamping all records.
Yes, this is unprecedented. It's unlike anything that we've seen historically, at least in modern times. To really put it in perspective for South Carolina, if we look at the weekly unemployment insurance claims that had been in effect before the outbreak took place, we were basically looking at about 2,000 new claims per week. That was really our baseline for a strong economy, a strong labor market. In 2008, during the Great Recession, we saw about 10,000 claims per week for well over a year. What we're seeing now is a spike of up to 31,000 in the first week that we have data available. But the question is how long that's going to last. And I think we're more likely to see a period of high intensity, but of shorter duration than a typical recession, such as what we saw in 2008.
Yes, it's springtime and we all want to be outside because it is really nice out. But you should know that doesn't include state parks right now. That's because they are closed through the month of April. Gotta walk around the block, folks. In our medical section, I want to talk about this study that I just came across from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation that forecasts what COVID-19 is going to look like for states across the country. This study estimates that hospital resource use and the daily death rate will peak in South Carolina on April 24th. Now, if these numbers hold true, which, you know, they're always changing, the state would have enough resources such as hospital beds and ventilators to handle the demand. However, it would fall short of the 88 intensive care unit beds needed. Again, this is just another model looking at the pandemic. DHEC estimates, like we said before, that we'll have about 8,000 cumulative cases by the start of May. So everything depends on what you do and what others do, aka stay home, social distance, wash your hands frequently, sanitize frequently touched surfaces. Speaking of which, are you still having to go to work? If you are, let us know. I actually want to hear from you. Give us a phone call at 803-563-7169. But I want to share this information with you because if you are going to work and maybe someone at your workplace has tested positive for COVID-19, you might be wondering, why are we still going to work? Shouldn't we be going home, or should we be working from somewhere else if it's safe? And state epidemiologist Dr. Linda Bell gave us some clarity on Friday about this. So take a listen. This, again, is our state's top health expert on this virus.
We don't recommend that entire business shut down just because a single person has been identified with COVID-19. It can vary from the work setting, but in general, we focus on the close contacts, people who've had close, prolonged face-to-face contact with someone who is ill. And so the casual contacts who might be present in a business setting, it is of no value to actually close the business setting in that instance. We recommend closures and discourage large groups because of the possibility that there could be somebody in a population unrecognized, and that's how disease is spread. But we also want to maintain, as has been said, employment, and so they're really different situations, but there is we know that there's a lot of concern about people saying that there may have been a worker in my work site who's ill, but that's not an indication to just close a business.
South Carolina Public Radio's Victoria Hansen has this report on a Medical University of South Carolina student who is using a 3D printer to print a mask that you can print at home yourself if you wanted to. They got the designs out there and the diagrams out there online for you. But here's the latest on this little breakthrough here in South Carolina.
That is the sound of a personal protection mask being made by a 3D printer, the kind desperately needed by hospital workers on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. It's the brainchild of a team at the Medical University of South Carolina, including Joshua Kim, senior designer and program coordinator with the Department of Surgery. He had been trying to figure out a way to create a filtration cartridge for a mask when suddenly it came to him.
Yeah, so that moment was an epiphany moment. It was a great moment.
Instead of thinking, how do I make an N95 mask like those currently used, he thought, what exactly does that mask do? It filters out particles of a certain size. Reframing the question gave him an idea.
Oh, wait, you can just use air conditioning filters. They filter out viruses too.
So he tried using a HEPA filter like those found at home improvement stores, and it worked.
So I just started 3D printing at home, made a cartridge prototype in 15 hours, brought it to campus, and started collaborating with everyone else on how to get it onto a 3D printed mask.
Joshua Kim, by the way, is 25 years old.
The younger people, you know, they're so facile with these computers and 3D printers. They were the ones that actually created this respirator that we can use.
That's Dr. Michael Yost, the vice chairman of surgery for research at MUSC. His 23-year-old son, John, collaborated with Kim. Meantime, Dr. Yost and his team had been working on a printable mask.
And I think in about 3 days, we had some prototypes that we were in the hospital testing.
The team added a foam seal around the mask, and combined with the cartridge, it passed rigorous clinical testing. MUSC recently released 3D printable files and an instruction guide on its website. Now anyone can help outfit an army of hospital workers, pharmacists, grocery store clerks, even themselves.
And that was part of our design criteria, was to make it so as many people as possible, as simply as possible, could put these together.
Perhaps 3D printing still feels a bit strange. Kim says, think about it as a hot glue gun. But instead of glue, it pushes hot plastic onto a printer, layer by layer, creating a 3D object. Kim says it can take 10 to 20 hours to print both the mask and cartridge components. But once done, they are easily put together using glue, a knife, scissors, and a pair of pliers. He says the cost is $5 to $15, depending upon how many are made at one time. Don't have a 3D printer? Kim says they are typically available at schools and libraries, and some sell online for a couple hundred dollars. For Kim, coming up with a 3D mask and respirator is all about problem solving. The Northwestern grad was inspired by NASA engineers who brought the Apollo 13 crew safely home using duct tape.
And I just love tinkering with things and figured that during this time of social distancing, this is one of the best times to be productive. We have all of this new time on our hands to kind of fill up with things we can do.
Social distancing, a way to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, but maybe a chance to check in with ourselves and discover a well of untapped creativity.
And looking back at the studies and projections that we keep talking about, it's worth noting that even after we peak, you're still going to want to keep up some of those social distancing measures and, you know, maintaining those hygiene practices, since we'll still be building up herd immunity to this virus and still awaiting a vaccine, which is at least a year away at this point. So just kind of bear that all in mind as we talk about getting to the end of this at some point. It's still going to be a very long, ongoing process. Now, this is our wind-down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world, what your daily routine is, and hey, where does the lead fit into it? Tell us that and more at 803-563-7169. This is our new normal, and we're all in this together, folks. So let us know what you're up to. 803-563-7169. You might just get on the pod. So, let's check the answering machine. Beep.
Hi. What I want to know is, how are they going to help people that have mortgage? Because when you call the mortgage company for a deferral, they tell you you still got to pay this money back after 90 days. Tell someone, please find out and help us. Thank you.
So I looked up online some things about this, and I came across a Forbes article, which we'll have in our show notes, talking about this. And what it said is that if you have a mortgage, you can only leverage whatever relief plan is available through the loan's owner and what they have offered. It's interesting to note, though, that the loan owner might not be the bank or your original lender you got it through. If you're not sure who owns your loan, you can always visit Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae to look up and find out who owns it, since Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae own a majority of these loans out there, these mortgages out there. You can also look back to your closing paperwork to see if you have an FHA-insured loan. Now, it might take contacting your servicer to find out who really owns your loan and what mortgage relief options you're eligible for during the coronavirus outbreak. So I think you might have to spend some time on the phone trying to chase some of this stuff down and then working with those servicers directly. So that was an interesting question there. But AT, I know you've been cooped up too. Everyone's been doing their social distancing and trying to keep this working. So I'm wondering what you've been up to, how you're coping with this, and maybe some tips or what you've been watching, Tiger King, perhaps?
Yes, okay, yeah. We got to talk about it. I finished Tiger King.
Mm-hmm.
There is one big, big thing. We both agree on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it involves guns.
Surprise.
But I also thought it was a pretty underwhelming thing overall. Mm-hmm. I do think we're trapped inside. I think we have Stockholm Syndrome with Netflix.
Number one on Netflix.
Number one by a mile.
Incredible.
I'm not trying to take that away from it, but it ends in unseen courtroom drama. That was a real buzzkill, you know?
There's plenty of room for part two.
There isn't, I don't think.
Mm.
I'd like a made-for-TV movie of it, though.
Oh, they're going to do one.
They have to.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon's going to play Carol.
Carol?
Yeah.
Oof.
They've announced this, yeah.
I think she got away easy by the end of it. Like, they stopped talking about how she definitely killed her husband.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I don't like that she always got the slow-mo treatment. They
yes.
always gave her, like, this ethereal
biking, slow-mo.
I'm like, what? And then, like, Joe was just, I mean, granted, like, you know.
There's one part where a tiger starts trying to eat Joe's feet. And he said, because there's cologne on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cut to Carol, and she goes, that's crazy. If you want a tiger to eat someone, you got to cover them in anchovy juice. And I was like, Carol, you're giving it away right now. You can't do that. She obviously knows how to do it.
She plays it close to the chest like.
Come on. I watched a different thing. It's called Kingdom, also on Netflix.
Oh.
And it's like medieval Korean samurai Walking Dead.
Mm. And even with your knife shows.
Yeah, more knives. Very, very cool. I suggest you watch that. Don't watch it with children. It's strange. Like, Korean shows, it's overdubbed, so you don't have to read the whole time. But, like, they don't like to show people barfing, but they'll show a head getting chopped off.
So quaint.
What are you doing, huh? What's your pick?
I started, reading the third part of that Annihilation Southern Reach trilogy series.
Yeah, so good.
So I'm on the third book now, and I was actually walking and reading at the same time while doing this, so really stoked. It's, I'm maximizing everything in my time off here. So
if you've seen that movie Annihilation, the book is not like that. It's very different, much better.
The first book is Annihilation, the second book's Authority, and then the third book is Acceptance.
I liked the second book. You didn't like the second book.
It was okay. Just everything's like, I mean,
control.
Really gotta like read them in order.
The ending of that book is quick. A doozy. Absolute doozy. But yeah, the Area X book, superior to Annihilation the movie, and that's a good movie. I like that movie. You got any shows gone?
I mean, Tiger King just blew me away. Then I focused on reading because I'm like, okay, I got
it. Ended television for you?
Well, I got my shows, and then I'm like, okay, I don't need to sit here and watch so much stuff. I'm going to read, can expand my mind.
You can watch The Forge and Fire if you want.
I mean, I don't need to watch trash TV.
Aren't you interested in Through Tanks and My Billets?
Completely uninterested. Like, I'll watch like certain shows and movies, but then it's like, you know, I'm going to read because reading's more beneficial.
I mean,
I never have time to read, and I feel like I'm always caught up in stuff. And
I'm reading. If I read, I can't go to sleep. I get too amped up.
Oh, I've been having a hard time sleeping.
I just read Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy all night.
All I do is think about what I need to be working on. So it's fun.
It's cool.
But yeah, hour-long walks, and then just some good Peloton home workouts. Can't push that hard enough.
Trying Gross. To come out of this. Disgusting.
Trying to come out of this with at least a flat stomach for spring.
You're condoning that. Beach bodies, it doesn't matter anymore.
Oh,
it's not happening.
It does in my front yard.
It doesn't matter.
But that's our wind down. So again, tell us what you're doing. You know, namaste. And leave us a message, 803-563-7169. And thank you for tuning in to another important pod. You can keep up with the latest on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers, guys. They're out there too, bringing you some quality news, as is local television. Now, once you get your fill of the news, though, take a break from it. That's what I'm saying. You can also follow me on Twitter, @GavinJackson, for the latest news. And I'll also let you know if the governor is going to have a press conference. He's not having one today. It's Monday. But they're always carried live on SCETV and South Carolina Public Radio platforms, usually around 4:30. So we are here for you, our lead community, throughout the week as this situation continues to develop. And we are in full-scale #LeadLaughLove mode together. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Wash your hands.